What does the Apostle Paul say these days are about?
Sincerity and truth.
And the Greek word for the word sincerity, but poorly translated, by the way, in English, it's actually a Greek word that refers to that which is pure or that which is clean. So it's basically the days of cleanliness and truth, or the days of purity and truth. Now, purity only comes from God. We know that. And cleanness only comes from God. And so we learn that on these things. This is called the seventh day of the days of unleavened bread. And in this day, remember, seven represents what? Completion. Something's being completed. Not by what we do, but being completed by what God is doing. And He is going to complete within us. He says, I have begun a good work in you, and I will complete that good work. So within that good work are these days of what's called the days of unleavened bread. And in a particular period of time, God is purifying us, cleansing us, as well as showing us and giving us the truth by and through His Word via His Son. We kind of understand that, right? Real simple thing about this day, this period of time. But today is a special day. We're going to talk about today. On the banner up there, you see, like, it's the parting of the Red Sea. And it has to do with what took place on that day. And there's a comparison between what took place then and what the Apostle Paul relates to in the New Testament. We'll talk a little about that. But right now, let's just have a variation, because a lot of people, when they just read the story, they have a hard time understanding something that's been written there in Hebrew, and it's only written in one place. And it had to do with the journey. Okay? So Exodus, 13th chapter, starting in verse 20. Because remember, they went and left, and they went to a place called, and they took their journey from Sukkot, and encamped at Etham, at the edge of the wilderness. Verse 21, and Yahuwah went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead them the way, and by night a pillar of fire to give them light, that they might go by day and by night. The pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night departed not from them before the people. So in the next encampment, it's farther away, much farther away. This is the only time in the book where the light is said day and night. They traveled day and night, day and night, day and night. No, they didn't do that afterwards. Once they crossed over, they didn't travel by day, by night, but they traveled 40 years, of course, to different campsites, but they didn't travel day and night, day and night, day and night. The cloud kept moving this time. It didn't stay, let them sleep. It kept moving. Now, we say that's humanly impossible. That's true. I would not be able to do it, and neither would you. But at the very same time, after 40 years, your clothes didn't rot off you either. And your feet didn't swell from walking so much. And you had shoes that didn't wear out. So we're talking that the Creator of heaven and earth is providing that protection. The very same thing about traveling by day and traveling by night, traveling by day and traveling by night. It's only in this section of the 13th chapter of Exodus. So they crossed the Red Sea. They camped at a place. Let's go to chapter 14 and verse 1. Then Yahweh spoke unto them, saying, speak unto the children of Israel that they turn back and encamp at Pihahiroth. All that word means in English, it just means a gorge. It's a plurality of word now. It ends in an O-T, so it's a feminine word, and it has a plurality here. All that means is a gorge formed by rivers. Just like we have it like a delta. And there was a gorge, when the rivers used to come through there, two rivers would come through and opened up, and they have a gorge. A lot of water would travel through there. By this time, there was no water, of course. Because God had brought the flood. Anyway, that's another story. And so here we are, and he calls and he says, between Migdol, Migdol in Hebrew means a tower, a fortified military tower. It was a post for the outer extremities of the Egyptian border. Very outer extremities of the Egyptian border. And the sea. And between Baal Zephon. Baal Zephon means nothing more in Hebrew, but the Baal of winter, or it also can mean the Lord of the North. Do I have to explain that today? And so they can't buy that particular place. Now in verse 3, and Pharaoh will say of the children, because Yahweh is talking to Moses here, and he's saying to Moses, Pharaoh shall say unto the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in. They can't get out. There's no way out. They can't turn back, and they can't go forward. And there's no lush farmyards there. There was nothing there. It was a gorge filled out and a broad area where they could encamp. And in here, Yahweh says, I will harden, or that word in Hebrew is, I will strengthen Pharaoh's heart, and he shall follow them. And I will make my honor, upon Pharaoh and upon all his host. And the Egyptians shall know that I am Yahuwah. And they, Israel, did so. They went to aid camp where they're supposed to be. They went to the exact location where they're supposed to be. Verse 5. And it was told to the king of Egypt that the people fled. Okay, great, good. His heart was hardened and therefore he went on. And he says, I've got him now. I can kill him. It's funny, when we look back on it, you say, well, but don't you know your firstborn was just wiped out by God? Well, he hardened his heart, or strengthened his heart, made him angry, I guess you might say, made him bitter, want resentment, wanting to get even. Of course, you know, we know the story, it didn't work. And anyway, he brought all his famous chariots and he went and did all his joint, went after them. Verse 9 of the 14th chapter. And Egyptians pursued after them all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh and his horsemen and his army overtook them, they could not flee backwards, and encamped by the sea. And beside this place called Peor Hahorot. And in the front of Baal Zephon. And Pharaoh drew nigh, and the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians were coming. They were terrified. There was no way you could turn back. And there's no way can you go forward. You are as good as dead, one way or the other. Very important that we kind of see a picture here. It wasn't just a miracle of, yay, the great sea opened up. I want to find out what God said. Because it's very important for us to pay attention to what he is saying. I've said many times, and I'll say again, the book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, it's not about what happened historically. It's the actions of the creator of heaven and earth. Totally in charge of everything, bringing everything to the point where he has had in mind in the very beginning, which we have sometimes think, what do you think about God? He says, my ways are not your ways. My ways are much higher, yours way down here on earth. So we have not been able to have communication here in that case. If you want to know what I have to say, you have to come up with me. And then it works, yeah. And of course, they were terrified. And in verse verse 13. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, verse 13. And Moses said unto the people, fear ye not, stand still. Stand still. I bet they couldn't move. They couldn't run back. But he meant keep your mouth quiet. Shut up and watch what's going to happen. And see the salvation. This word here is in Hebrew. Is Shavuot. I'm not sure. Yahshuot, which we come from the word Yah. Where did we get the word Yahshua? Yahshua means Yah saves. This is the noun meaning salvation, deliverance, being delivered from something. So now we're going to find out what God had in mind to really deliver them from. Because that's important. And Moses had to probably shout real loud. And he says, you will never see these Egyptians ever again. Very important statement that's being said here on the seventh day of the days of unleavened bread. You'll never see them again. They are not going to be part of your life ever again. That's quite something to say, isn't it? Let's go on. Yahuwah will fight for you, and ye shall hold your peace. Stop whining, complaining. Now remember, if you were there, and you were one of them, all remember, all you ever saw, you never saw anything except, okay, Moses doing this, Aaron doing that, and that cloud, okay. No. They saw those things, but they really did not see the hand of God. Because God wasn't going to let them see. What did God let them see? What was Moses representing of? What did Yahuwah say, I will make you? I will make you Elohim. That's power. Lots and lots of power. Lots and lots of strength. So they saw these things. No, behold, and he said, and Yahuwah said to Moses, therefore, criest out to me, speak unto the children of Israel, they go forward. Moses, don't talk to me. Do your job. What a job. Lift up your voice, lift up your rod, rather, and stretch it out, your hand, over the sea, and divide it. Okay, so he did. And he says, I am going to strengthen the heart of the Egyptians. And they shall go after them. You mean, parting of the sea, all night long, what was happening? An east wind came. Now remember, they were to stand where? Here's this gorge. One side was a mountain. The other side was also a mountain. They had to stand on the sides facing against the tower. Tower, the fortified spot. You have to stay there. So when the wind came through, it went right through and passed them up. Didn't go into them. It went by them. And all that dry, all that water, all the moisture, hot air, everything else went right through them, and they didn't even feel the wind. They just saw the results of what was taking place. That's a pretty powerful wind, wouldn't you think? Everybody wonders, you know, what are the powers of God? Okay, he's going to use missiles. He's going to use atomic bombs. No, he's going to use frogs, lice, wind, rain. He's already got his weapons. He didn't have to make anything more. It's already there. All he has to do is, water, turn into blood. It'll kill him. that's it. You know, we've got that power to do so. We don't. We don't have that power. So it's nothing to be afraid of them. Now, the Egyptians had military weapons. They had chariots. The honor guard. No, the Republic Guard. What did they do?
National Guard.
No, this is a more of a. It's the elite of the elite. That's the elite forces. That's the Green Berets that don't exist anymore. But it's the SEALs. You know, it's the I don't know what they are. I'm out of that picture, so I can't remember the names of those places. But you understand, these are very tough. But they also had their infantry there. Okay? And they went after them. After he went after them, what took place? They walked through on dry land, remember? Then what did God say to Moses? Turn around and tell the water to close. But before they closed, what did God do? They could not, the Egyptians, they saw it close, couldn't turn around and run. Remember why? The wheels came off. The angels came down and took the wheels off. That's the end of them. They couldn't run fast enough. They were in the center of the whole thing. They couldn't turn around and run back. And mud, water, slowed them down. Wait a minute, it was dry land for the Egyptians. And they rode in there and it became muddy. Couldn't even move. The horses couldn't even travel very fast. Too much mud. Horses don't like to travel in mud, by the way. They just kind of slow down. And so we see these things. And in the morning, watch took place. And the Egyptians were wiped out. And he says there, and in verse 25 there, and he took off the chariot wheels and made them to ride heavily. I mean, they just bogged them down. So that the Egyptians said, let us flee from... This is an interesting terminology. I don't know how he got this information from them, because I don't know anybody could hear it, except maybe Elohim told Moses. You know what they said? I said, I don't want it, because no one around to tell them what they said. It was all over. They're all dead. Let us flee from the face of Israel, for Yahuwah fights for them against the Egyptians. Well, there was no one there to tell the story. Who was there to tell the story? Well, God would have, God did talk to Moses quite often. More than likely, God said, by the way, this is what they said. Anyway, so he covered them all up. But the children of Israel walked on dry land. Now, they're past this thing now. Now, in verse 30, and thus Yahuwah saved Israel that day. Did you catch this? Verse 30, 14th chapter of Exodus. What happened today? What did he do? He saved Israel. How did he save Israel? What did he save them from? Well, look at the verse 30. Ellie.
If the wind that made the dirt dry can be likened to God's Spirit, and it went across and it made that dirt able to be walked on by his people, then he made us, through his Spirit, able to walk into the Torah. And yet, when people try to do it on their own, the waters of the Torah come back and
you're moving ahead of my question is.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, my question was, we're at the time of Moses, right? And the sea has now come together, and Yahweh said, thus Yahweh saved Israel that day. What did he save them from? From the hands of the Egyptians. All of them. Okay. What does that got to do with today? Is today a day of representation of being delivered and saved by the Creator of heaven and earth? Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so when we come to this day, the seventh day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread, what is it that we are learning from here? It is Elohim, the God, the Creator of heaven and earth, who has saved us from something. You got the picture, Daniel?
To me, which I've mentioned in the past regarding this particular passage, God saved Israel and saved, obviously, from the Egyptians. But to me, the key verse there is, through no action of their own.
No action of their own, right.
He specifically told Moses to tell them. Tells Israel, stand aside and watch the salvation of God.
Yeah, because the next verse, to clarify what he said, the next verse, verse 31, says, Israel saw the great work which Yahuwah did upon the Egyptians.
Ooh.
So they're seeing the power of God and the awesomeness of the destruction that God, El Shaddai, where is our El Shaddai? We don't have, oh, right there, no. We don't have our El Shaddai up here. Anyway, the power and strength of God is really evidenced to them on this day. Now, remember, seven is a completion of something. And I already said that seven is a completion of that when purity is in us from the Creator of heaven and earth, and truth is in us from the Creator of heaven and earth, there's something that He has to deliver us from before He can give us this purity. Before He can give us and make us clean. Something He has to do. Right? The very last thing that Yahuwah did to deliver the people was the destruction of the last enemy. Do you understand what I just said? He saved them from the last enemy by not just saving the Israelites, but by destroying the enemy. Different words, aren't they? That's not what he did. He destroyed the enemy. He destroyed the nation of Egypt. Destroyed their power, their wealth, their might. He destroyed and wiped them out as if they became absolutely a worthless power.
Then he destroyed death.
All right, now we're going into the next one. Here's your comparison here now. Apostle Paul, 1 Corinthians, and it's called 15th chapter, made a statement. He made a very interesting statement. He said here, verse 50, now this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of Elohim, nor does corruption inherit corruption. Corruption inherit incorruption. Behold, I tell you a mystery, a secret. Give us some inside information here. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. This you all will be changed. What's going to take place? The wicked eye, the last trump, the trump will be sound, and the dead will rise incorruptible, because they're in corruption. Right? When you see a dead person dying, what's happening? He's being corrupted. He's decomposing. He's rotting, or she's rotting. It's the end of his life. It's all gone, turned back to dirt. Nothing's left. That death cannot inherit the kingdom of God. That corruption cannot inherit the kingdom of God. So we know that when you're dead, you're not there. Oh boy, how do we get there? He says, of course, you know, and us, the mortal cannot put on immortality. Okay, so I'm alive, I'm walking, and I cannot put on where I could stop dying. I'm heading for corruption. Am I not? We're all heading for corruption. And when that happens, we are no longer mortal. We are now corrupted. We're in the process of being decomposed into nothing. Now, Apostle Paul says something very interesting here. Verse, I think it's 55. Is 55 the one to go to? Yeah, 55. So then, this corruptible has to put on incorruption, and the mortal has to put on immortality. How? Then shall be brought to pass the saying is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Okay. What was swallowed up in victory for the Israelites? Egypt. And Apostle Paul likened Egypt as to what? Sin. Not that they were sinners and everybody else was, but that we live in a world of corruption. We live in a world of sin and transgression, as the Israelites once lived in that world. Remember, it's a picture. When you see a picture, it tells us the story. They lived in a world that was luxurious. They lived in a world that was fantastic. They lived in a world where they had the best land of all of Egypt. Today, that Pacific land area is still the most prosperous land in all of Egypt. Yes. It's still... I'm sorry, what? Galatians. Oh, 15th chapter. Starting in verse 50. 1 Corinthians 15, verse 20. Verse 50. I'll get it out yet. So now, O death, where is your sting? O Hades, where is your victory? Okay. O Egyptians, where is your sting? O Egyptians, where's your victory? You get the picture? This is what this day is all about. I have delivered you. I have saved you. I have changed your life from dying to living. How did you do this? Let's go to Romans. No, I'm sorry, 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10. And starting in verse 1, I only got two verses here I want to read. Therefore, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware or ignorant that all our fathers were under what? Under what? The cloud. Now, was he talking about what? What happened when we go through this book and we go through the time of the cross in that sea, they were traveling under a cloud, right? And a pillar of fire by night. Now, he says, I don't want you, and passed through the sea. All were baptized, what? All were submerged into Moses in what? In the cloud. Oh. In the cloud? Were they baptized in the cloud? You remember what happened when they saw the Egyptians? What did the cloud do? It moved through the Israelites and stood behind them. Darkness was to the Egyptians and light was to the Israelites. They were baptized in that cloud. Then they had to be baptized one more time, didn't they? They had to go into the sea. Of course, they went on dry land. Yeah, okay, hunky-dory, we got that picture, great. Tell us, what is it talking to? What does that tell us? When they went in the sea, remember, it's still dark for the Israelites. I mean, for the Egyptians. And when they got partway through, probably almost all the way through, then the cloud lifted. That is, the darkness lifted. Then they got to see. And guess what? The Egyptians comes running after you. Now, let me ask you a question. In all the events that took place in Egypt, and the events that took place on the day that opened it up, which is the day of something called, I have delivered you from the enemy. And the enemy was the Egyptians, and the Egyptians were going to kill them. Right? It didn't happen, did it? Death happened to death. The killers were killed. Okay? Now, when you take a look at what happens to us, and this day of baptism of the Israelites is a direct parallel of what happens to us when we accept baptism. What kind of baptism did you have to accept? Oh, just get wet? Well, that's one thing. The Egyptians got wet too. But then he come back up. Let's go to Romans, 6th chapter. Today is the day, quote, that they were baptized. We don't think of them as being baptized, do we? Even though Apostle Paul says they were. Right? They were immersed in the cloud and the sea. Oh, they were put into the cloud and oh, the cloud went into, and they went into the sea. They actually were in the water, though they walked on dry land. God kept them alive during that period of time. Romans 6, starting verse 1. What shall we say then? Shall we continue in sin that grace may abound? Certainly not. How shall we who have died to sin live any longer in it? Okay, how do we die into sin? I don't understand that part, right? Confusing me, Paul. But do you not know that as many of us who were baptized unto Messiah, Yeshua, were baptized into his death? What's an interesting statement. What did the Apostle Paul say here? He said something very odd. They were baptized into whom? Oh yeah, they're baptized into Moses. Now we are being baptized into Messiah. Do you see the picture? Now, what happened? Death took place. Right? Who died? He said, now don't you know that when you were baptized, you're baptized into what? Into life? You're baptized into death. Were the Egyptians baptized into life or death? Were the Israelites baptized into life or death? Death! But they came out on the other side alive. What did God remove from the Israelites when he did that? He removed the Egyptians out of the world, right? Gone, past, goodbye, let's go on with life. But you know, how wonderful was life thereafter? Yes. 40 years later, they finally get into the land. Now, 40 years is very interesting. Do you have a question?
On verse 2, baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea, isn't that, in a sense, saying that baptism into Moses or the Messiah is the same?
Same.
Like the Messiah at that time. Moses is the same picture of the Messiah.
Same in the picture, same picture of the Messiah.
Which carries over to the Song of Moses and the Song of the Lamb, that they both have a part?
Right. Now when he came out, verse back in Romans here now, Verse 4. Therefore we are baptized with him through baptized into death, that just as Yeshua, or Messiah, rather, was raised from the dead, God on the other side, by the glory of whom? The Father. Remember I said last week, the Father is more directly involved in your life than most of us even can imagine. He is directly involved with our life. He is not way off in Neverland waiting for his son to do his job. His son did his job, now the Father is doing his job. Plain as day. It's the Father that started a good work in you, and it's the Father going to finish that good work in you. It's the Father who is the husband of the vineyard. It is he who prunes it. He who takes care of it. He's the one that pricks it. He's the one that gets rid of the bad, the branch of no good. And he's the one that produces and wants more and more. He's doing the work. All the Messiah is what? He's just the what? I would say all. He is the vine. And guess what that vine's producing? Branches. Who owns the vine? The Father. He actually owns him. Even so, we should walk in newness of life. So now we're coming to this end of this today. I'm not so much, the sermon's not going to be very long today, because I just want more time for you to have more fun. I know you like to dance. You got a statement?
Yeah, I was just thinking about this, because you made this comment earlier that, you know, God removed the physical threat of the Egyptians out of their lives, out of their world. But you also mentioned, but yet it took them 40 years to get to the land. And that's to me, it seems like it's in part it's because even though God destroyed the Egyptians physically, they were no longer a superpower and this and that and the other after that time. Yet, when you read later on, they were still longing for Egypt. Even though
yes.
Egypt was a miserable life for them. But yet, they were nitpicking and whining and complaining. They wanted to go back to Egypt. At one point, they even wanted to assassinate Moses and pick somebody to take them back. I mean, it was...
Yes, yes.
And don't we do the same thing, though, with sin? God, Yeshua died. We accept Yeshua.
It was so much easier back then.
And then we sometimes look back and think, well, you know, I want to do that again. You know, I want to, you know...
Life wasn't that bad back then.
It wasn't that bad, you know? And we put that back into our lives and then wonder why, you know, we are miserable. Yeah. It's because God cleaned that out and we brought it back in.
Yeah, that's why Apostle Paul said here, What shall we say? Shall we continue and sin, or even wanting to go back and enjoy that moment in time in our life, is gone. As much as the Egyptians were gone, it was gone. Now remember, they kept complaining. And remember, it's very important that they kept complaining. When did they actually, what did God do when, after Moses died? For 40 years, they did not do something. What did they not do? They did not circumcise. Very fascinating, right? Why didn't they circumcise? Because God says no. Now, as he entered in, he now did something different. What did he say? I have rolled back something. Remember what he rolled back? The reproach of the Egyptians. Got rid of them. Now, remember, the new generation came on the scene. And so they had to, that new generation really forgot about how it once was. The old generation died out. Now he says, now you'll be circumcised. Yes?
After Moses died, they stopped circumcising for 40 years?
No, said after Moses died, they circumcised. But they did not circumcise from the time they left Egypt until they were in the promised land. For 40 years, no circumcision.
But Moses was circumcised.
Oh, yes, he was. We're talking about Moses. I'm talking about the people.
Let me finish my question.
Okay.
Moses was circumcised on his way to
or, go, yeah, or somebody was. We don't
right,
know.
Okay.
My first opinion, he was circumcised before.
They knew about circumcision, but you're saying while they were in the wilderness, the children of Israel even after they had received the Ten Commandments,
even after they received the Ten Commandments,
the children of Israel did not circumcise.
They did not circumcise.
They began circumcising after they reached the Promised Land.
They had to. They could not enter the Promised Land until they got circumcised.
Okay.
There's a reason behind it. Has to do with Passover, but we're not going to go there.
Okay, because the reproach of Egypt showed that the stamp of Egypt, or the uncircumcision, was still upon the people.
You got it.
It took 40 years to get that stamp,
now
that
he's going
circumcision
right.
gone, or ready now, to be gone.
Now it is past. It is now over with for this next second generation, remember. We're not talking about the first generation, we're talking about the second generation. Okay, 40 years later. Just as Elohim did deliver Israelites from destruction of the last enemy through Yahshua, he has destroyed the enemy. What was the enemy destroyed? Sin. Sin has destroyed. Okay, so now we got this picture. Do you understand the picture, what this is all about? The last day of unleavened bread is very, very important, because the story goes beyond that, but we're not going beyond that story right now. We're going at this point in time. That there's a picture here for us to look at and see, oh, now we know that Elohim destroyed sin. Now, as what Tommy said, however, we have a tendency to remember it. And sometimes we have a tendency, you know, it wasn't that bad then. It might have bad things here and there, but it wouldn't have been that bad. But remember, Israelites, we look back at them, you can't find them full of sin and iniquity and transgressions. What did you find of them? They had nice homes. They had the best land. The land was not taken away from them. They lived in luxury. All of it was gone. Every bit of it. Remember what Yahshua said to his disciples? This way is wonderful. This way is abundance. This way you get tremendous amount of wealth, honor, glory, and prestige, right? He said it's going to be hard. Let me ask you a question. In the 40 years, was it hard for the Israelites?
Yes.
They had to live through this thing for 40 years before they could get into the Promised Land. And before they got to the Promised Land, something else had to be removed. The reproach of the Egyptians. In a sense, the reproach of sin in our life. What is it that we should be taking in? What are these days? Which is purity and truth. Purity and truth. That comes by the power of God, and God only, because only God gives us that. We can't invent it. We can't change ourselves from mortal to immortality. We cannot change the dead into incorruptible. Only God can do that. And just like sin being completely removed from the Israelites, or actually the Egyptians removed from the Israelites, we have to have that in our own mind. Just as Israel left behind, or I should say, just as God had the Israel, forced the Israelites, I would say yes, forced, because they were forced out, remember? And they're forced out, left behind their past. In those 7 days, days of unleavened bread, he was taking them to purity, to cleanliness, and to truth. And then we get Pentecost. Yes?
I just think it's interesting that, you know, the book of Exodus starts out, the people are praying, you know, because the Egyptians are persecuting them, and they're praying to God that God will stop them from hurting them. You know, they wanted God to make the Egyptians like them and be nice to them, but God said, no, I'm actually going to make them meaner to you. They're going to be even more cruel than they were before, and they're going to spit you out by the time I'm done with them. which is the total opposite of what they thought they were praying for. It's kind of ironic.
Yeah. You had a comment?
Just like when I was thinking I was going to become a, when I became a Christian, I thought, oh, this is going to be great. But then when you start to study and you look, you think, oh, my goodness, what have I done? Because the more that you know, the more that you're accountable. It's like ignorance is bliss. Because when you think you know something...
It's also a curse, by the way, on the other side of the fence.
Well, I know, but I mean, it's like, wow, and I thought, you know, I'm going to be saved, I'm going to heaven, but I didn't know. I thought it was like a little all over, and I was going to be someone new, and I was going to be talking like this, and so nice.
Okay.
And then I found out, uh-oh.
Okay, remember, we have, and in the Christian world, they believe once saved, always saved. Look at the Egyptians. I mean, look at the Israelites. Once they were saved, delivered from, 40 years later, how many of them died? By the hand of God. By the hand of God! Wow, a lot. Pruning, remember he's got the pruners? He cuts them off if they don't produce. Off they go. What does he do with them? He throws them into the fire. Goodbye. Okay. I'm almost over with. Almost 3 o'clock. Okay. These times of the days of unleavened bread comes to a when it comes to completion, we are beginning to live a new life. As the Israelites, when they crossed over, remember they had a big party, they danced, and Miriam did all that singing stuff. However, they faced a really hard life. Remember the first place they were headed? What was the name of the place? The first place that God took them?
Jericho, after they got into the land, right?
Oh, my. The journey to where? Where? Sour water. God gave them water that killed them. Poisoned them. To do what? Why did he do that for? Huh? To show them he is their healer. Oh, but you just poisoned us. Yes. I'm going to heal you now. What? That doesn't make sense. But that's how God is. What? Someone said something?
This way is not our way.
We are to live differently than ever before by every word of Elohim, not just what we pick and choose. We don't have to pick and say, I like this word, but I don't like that one. I like God over here, but I don't like that one over there when he kills people. I like God over here, but I don't like him when he punishes. Why? Is he not God? Does he not have a first say-so and the last say-so? Yes, he does. So days of unleavened bread. Yeah, we're going through this thing. And the day of where he's got to have completion of purity and completion of righteousness and completion of what is true. But the Israelites didn't get it for 40 years. Picture of entering into the promise. And they couldn't hang on to it. A different story. All the good and all that was not so good was all behind us. And now we're heading forward. Now, none of the Israelites knew where they were going. They had no idea. Moses had an inkling of the idea. Because God said to Moses, you return back to this mountain. And that will be evidence for you that I am in charge. But he didn't know what God was going to say. He had no idea. Neither did the Israelites. And so the journey is now. From here, there's another journey. And that journey is going to go. We're not going to talk about this. I gave a real long one many years, a couple years ago, 3 years ago. We don't need to go through that again. So when Pentecost comes, there'll be a brief summary of what that takes place. But, okay. Any questions? This day is a day of what? Salvation. Is this not a day of, oh, this is the last day of unleavened bread, I can't wait. Of course, you know, tomorrow you can't buy anything. So actually, tomorrow would be another day of unleavened bread. But anyway, unless, of course, you invite a friend over tonight. No. You know, like, you know, a cousin, a relative, you know, whatever. You know, hey, by the way, bring the bread, would you? No, I've been funny on that one. Okay, there are no comments. I hope the day was somewhat useful and somewhat understanding of a comparison of what took place then, how it happens, and how it really compares to our own personal private life. You know, I've walked this way for over 40 years. It's a long walk. A very long walk. Sometimes, I'll be upfront with you, sometimes for years, it's very alone. There's not a lot of people that say, oh, I think he's cool, I'll go with him. No, that isn't it. You know, some of you have been here just as long as I've been around here. You know what that means. It doesn't work that way. It is a father who prunes. It's a father when it cuts back. Now, if I'm not producing some for some years, he's really got to cut back. And thank God that he hasn't led me to death.